phrase for such a useless pursuit was a wild goose chase. His temper got the better of him, and he bellowed in anger. Not even a dragon could fly ceaselessly. He could never hope to catch it. Even as he realized this, the artifact took a turn toward the southwest. Calicos thrashed his tail and beat his wings, then calmed himself. It was true that as long as the thieves were toying with him like this, he would never get close enough to the focusing iris to retrieve it. But they could not do this forever. As long as the focusing iris was flitting erratically from place to place, Azeroth was safe. It would have to come to a halt in order for any use to be made of it. His path over the last several hours, during which he'd been forced to pause and rest, had taken him over Silithus, the Un'Goro Crater, Feralus, Mulgore, the Barrens, and now to Northwatch Hold. Or rather, what remained of Northwatch Hold. Once, it had boasted towers and walls to enclose its inhabitants safely. Once, it had been a military stronghold that had sent out scouts and siege weapons, warriors and generals. The troops that had destroyed Camp Taraho had been garrisoned there. Now, it looked as if some giant hand had smashed it like a toy. The towers were reduced to just a pile of stones, as were the walls. The cannons were silent, and smoke wafted upward in a thin, gray-black line from a large fire. And swarming around the ruins of a once proud alliance hold were hundreds of tiny figures. Horde. From this height, Kallak could not distinguish what races, but he could spot the basic colors of each banner. All were represented here. The wind shifted, and Kallak grimaced as his sharp nose caught an acrid scent. The victors were burning bodies, whether their own in a sober ceremony or those of their enemies, Kallak could not tell, and had no wish to. The trail of the focusing iris continued blithely along. It turned yet again, heading back toward Mulgore, but Calicos was no longer following it. With one strong downward beat of his wings, Kallak repositioned his body and changed direction, flying now directly to the south. He knew what he needed to do. He could track the focusing iris from Theramore, and he would. He would wait until it finally came to a stop, until the thieves had tired of the game, and then head directly for it. In the meantime, he would return to Jaina Proudmoore. From what he had seen, she was going to need all the help she could get.
"How many did he say?" asked Paind.
She, Tervosh, Kindi, and Jaina were in the library, but the long table at which they'd spent so many hours recently was no longer covered with books or scrolls. Instead, a large map of Kalimdor was spread out over it, the only books remaining on the table serving to anchor the parchment at each corner. "He didn't," Jaina said. "At least, not specifically. He said only that the Horde's numbers were strong, and as we are now, we would fall."
"Are you sure you can trust him?" asked Kindi. "I mean, come on, he's a member of the Horde. This could be a trap of some sort. We end up calling in reinforcements and bracing Theramore, and then they attack Stormwind or something."
"For someone so young, Kindi, you have quite a suspicious mind," said a voice.
Jaina whirled, her heart lightening as Kallak strode into the room. Her pleasure faded somewhat as she got sight of his face. It was still handsome and smiling, but he was paler than she recalled, and there were furrows in his brow.
"You couldn't find it," she said quietly.
Kallak shook his head.
"They're playing a little game with me," he said. "Whenever I get close to the focusing iris, they move it somewhere else."
"Trying to wear you out," said Paind. "It is a sound strategy."
"Sound or not, it's as frustrating as trying to haggle with a goblin," said Kallak. "I can sense it from here. I will wait until it slows and stops. Then I will go in search of it."
"Is it safe to wait?" asked Paind.
Jaina answered for him.
"We don't know what they are planning, but attuning so ancient an artifact toward whatever it is they want to do will take time and effort, especially as they aren't blue dragons and therefore have no innate connection with the focusing iris. They cannot perform such complex work if they're traveling with it. Kalikos is right. When the iris ceases to move, then he can track it down.
I hope you have enough time, said Kindi.
You would have me out there flying around uselessly?
Well, when you put it that way, no.
He nodded, then turned to Jaina.
I came back for another reason, he said. It sounds as if you've already heard, but Northwatch Hold has fallen to the Horde. I saw what was left of it.
We have heard, she said, from a very trusted source. But you've seen it. I was also warned that from there, the Horde plans to march on Theramore. Kallak paled even more.
Jaina, you were completely unprepared for them.
We were told their numbers are strong, Jaina said. And that, yes, right now we aren't prepared for them. But thanks to the warning, I've had a chance to send out some requests for aid.
I don't know if that will be enough, said Kalikos. Jaina, every race of the Horde was there. They have all but wiped Northwatch from the face of Azeroth. The only things that remain are rubble and pyres. They've not dispersed. The army, and it is an army, is still gathered. I wish I could truly show you what I saw. If your requests for aid are not met, and quickly, you're not going to survive the attack.
And then Garrosh will summarily destroy the rest of the Alliance footholds, said Tervash.
Kallak nodded, his eyes somber. Jaina looked at them, then at Paind and Kindi.
You are all acting as if the Horde is already won. I won't accept that.
She narrowed her eyes and jutted her chin out defiantly.
I believe Kallak when he says they have an army encamped at Northwatch. But if they are there now, then they are not marching. And if they are not marching, then they are not ready to march. That means we still have time.
She moved to the table, feeling Kallak's curious gaze upon her. Look, here's Northwatch. She tapped a slender finger on the map. And here's Theramore. She drew her finger down and to the right. Over here is Brackenwall Village. Some Horde live there, but it's not a military outpost. It does stand between Fort Triumph and us, however. Fort Triumph was a rather newly established military base. If there had been more time, Jaina thought, it would have sent reinforcements to Northwatch. It might be too late for Northwatch Hold, but she prayed it wasn't too late for Theramore. We'll have the soldiers from Fort Triumph march through Dustwallow Marsh. They can avoid Brackenwall if they're careful. We'll also send out runners to forward command.
Any who are left, Kallak said. When I passed over the area, it seemed deserted.
Most of them probably went to help Northwatch, said Kindi quietly.
Which, Jaina thought with a pang, meant most of them were dead. She shook her golden head, almost physically trying to clear the image from her mind's eye. Any who escaped the battle probably regrouped at Fort Triumph rather than Ratchet, she said. It's the first place we should look for survivors. Kallak stepped beside her, his focus on the map. She looked at him in query, expecting him to have a comment. He shook his head.
Go on, he said.
Theramore is both uniquely vulnerable and highly defensible, depending on how fast reinforcements can get here. If we act quickly, Stormwind can send several ships, and any Horde vessels that attack will, hopefully, not even get close enough for their crews to come ashore. She placed a finger on the map and drew a half-circle around Theramore.
If the Horde reaches the harbor first, Paind said, we will have no chance at all.
Jaina turned to look at her.
That is true, she said. Perhaps we should all just lay down our arms and go to the dock so we can greet the Horde, and thus save ourselves the trouble of a battle.
Paine's purple-pink cheeks flushed a darker hue.
You know I do not advocate that.
Of course you don't. But we have to go into this battle thinking, no, knowing we will succeed.
I welcome all comments about flaws in my planning, she said, addressing this to Kalikos.
Pained, Kindi, and Tervosh already knew Jaina was open to constructive criticism. But comments like that, Pained, do nothing save drag us down. Theramore has defended itself well in the past. We will do so again.
Whom have you sent letters to so far? Asked Kallik.
Jaina smiled a little. Letters? None. Nor have I teleported. I have a way to instantly communicate with King Varian, young Anduin, and the Council of Three Hammers.
That must be interesting, said Kallik. From what I hear, the three dwarves seem inclined to agree on very little.
Not so long ago, Ironforge's leader had been Magni Bronzebeard. In an attempt to better understand the unease of the Earth prior to the Cataclysm, Magni had performed a rite to make him one with the Earth. It had succeeded, after a fashion. Magni had been turned into diamond, indeed becoming one with the Earth. After a brief time of chaos, during which Magni's daughter, Moira, attempted to claim the Ironforge throne and rule with the Dark Iron Dwarves, order was restored when a council was formed instead of continuing the tradition of a single ruler. Each clan of dwarves, Bronzebeard, Wildhammer, and Dark Iron, now had a representative. The ruling body was called the Council of Three Hammers, and while its members cooperated, getting unanimity on anything was a challenge. It would seem that no one likes the idea of the Horde running Kalimdor, Jaina said. While they might argue some of the details, all three were in agreement about that. Kalikos suddenly looked uneasy. Jaina thought she knew why. Gently, she placed a hand on his arm. You are a dragon, Kalikos, she said. You don't need to be involved in this. Especially since you are a former aspect who is already preoccupied with tracking down a stolen artifact. He smiled gratefully.
Thank you for understanding, Jaina. But I would see none of you come to harm.
Lady Jaina knows what she's doing, said Kindi. The Alliance will come to protect its own.
Kalikos shook his head.
This is more than a scuffle or a raid on a small village. If the Horde succeeds, Garrosh would not be overconfident to assume that he could indeed control Kalimdor. We'll need to think on this before offering my aid. I'm sorry, Jaina.
He looked into her eyes, and she knew with perfect understanding how much this was tormenting him. Their hands, seemingly of their own volition, met and clasped. Jaina found herself reluctant to let go, but she had time only for the defense of Theramore right now. We need to take steps immediately, she said. I'll go contact Varian. Pained, you go among the soldiers, both here in Theramore proper and those stationed along the roads. If Sentry Point is without at least one horse, get them one. They need to be able to ride swiftly to inform us if the Horde approaches. The Night Elf nodded, saluted, and left at a running trot.
What about the civilians? Asked Kindi. Should we tell them?
Jaina considered, her brow furrowing in thought.
Yes, she said finally.
Theramore was originally a martial city. Those who choose to dwell here know its strategic position. We've been fortunate ere now. They will understand and obey our orders. She turned to Tervosh. You and Kindi, start going door to door informing the citizens. No more ships are to set sail from this port. We need every single vessel we can muster. Those civilians who wish to leave may, though I believe they'll be safer here than in the marsh with the Horde approaching. The gates will be open until sundown, at which time they will be closed and not reopened until the danger is past. I'm also putting a curfew into effect at 2 bells beyond sundown.
Why not at sunset? Kallik queried.
Because they are people, and they need to feel like people, not trapped animals. 2 hours past sundown will give everyone the chance to have a meal at an inn with their family, or have a drink or two with friends by the fire. Such simple things will remind them, when the fighting does come, what they are fighting for. Not just an ideal, or even their own survival, but also their homes, their families, their way of life. Kalikos looked surprised.
That had not occurred to me.
And 2 hours isn't really enough for anyone to get into trouble, said Kindi. Good idea.
Jaina gave her a bemused glance and wondered how she knew about such things.
"Thank you, world-weary one," Jaina said, smiling as the gnome rolled her eyes. "Any questions?"
"Nope," said Kindi. "Come on, Tervash. I'll go down to the harbor. You go talk to the soldiers at Foothold Citadel. While you're there, find out what supplies Dr. Van Housen is going to need to treat the injured. I'm sure there are many civilians here with first aid training who'll be glad to help."
Tervash suppressed a grin.
"Yes, boss,"
he said, as Kindi waved absently at Jaina and Kallik and started descending the stairs at a brisk pace. Shrugging, Tervash followed her.
"Your apprentice is most self-assured,"
Kallikos said. "A quality I have no desire to see her lose," said Jaina. "Few things are more dangerous than an insecure mage. Indecision at a crucial moment can cost lives." He nodded.
"Very true. Now, what can I be doing to help?"
"I will let you know. First, I need to contact King Varian," she said, adding apologetically, "I'm not sure he'd be particularly glad to know there's a blue dragon here."
"Ah, yes. I can quite understand that," said Kallik. "I will return to my quarters until you send for me."
"No, you can come," Jaina said. "Just don't stand in front of the mirror." He looked at her, baffled, and she smiled. Kallikos followed Jaina as they went from the library, which of course housed hundreds of books, to her parlor, which probably only housed dozens. Jaina stepped up to one shelf and touched three books in what struck Kallik as a very precise order. He was not altogether surprised when the bookshelf slid aside to reveal a mirror, oval and not elaborately framed, hidden behind the books. Kallik blinked. In the mirror, he saw Jaina's reflection and his own.
"You did mention a mirror. I assume there is more to this than a way to discreetly tell me I need to shave," he joked.
"Much more," she said. "It operates using the same methodology, the same math," she bowed slightly, "that a portal does. Except it's much simpler and more basic. Portals actually have to be able to physically transport someone somewhere. The mirror just allows viewing of a different place. And, if the timing is right, other people. I'm going to use this to contact Varian. Let's hope he's nearby, or we will have to try again." Kallik shook his head, again marveling at the wonderful lack of complexity of the younger races and their spells.
"I know of this sort of spell. Very old and very simple. Just like the costume spell the thieves utilized to hide the focusing iris from my detection."
"Yet your flight doesn't use such things?"
"Most would think it beneath them to use a garden variety spell like this one," he said, adding quickly, "but I think it's brilliant."
"I'm trying not to be insulted," said Jaina. She said the words lightly, but her brow had furrowed again.
"I," said Kallik, reaching for her hands, "am both clumsy and rude. I do think it's brilliant. We dragons..."
He struggled to explain the mentality of dragon flights, especially that of the blues.
"Dragons seem to think that the more complicated a thing is, the longer it takes to perform, the more ingredients it has, and the more people it requires to participate, the better it is. That goes for clothing, meals, magic, art, everything. They would rather sit down for days and design a laborious spell to teleport a thing directly to their hands than simply get up and fetch the salt cellar."
That got a smile out of her, and Kallik was glad. "So you like that I'm simple and uncomplicated?" Jaina queried. All the humor fled him.
"I like you," was all he could say. "I've seen you be simple, and I've seen you be complex, and it all suits you. You're Jaina, and I like Jaina."
She did not let go of his hands. Instead, she looked down at them. "That is high praise coming from a dragon," she said. He placed a finger beneath her chin and tilted it up so that she looked into his eyes.
"If that is praise, then you have earned it."
Color suffused her cheeks, and she stepped back,
releasing his hands and smoothing her robe unnecessarily. Well, thank you. Now, please, move all the way over into that corner. You should be out of Varian's line of sight there.
I obey, my lady, he said,
bowing and retreating to the corner she had indicated. Jaina turned to face the mirror. She paused for a moment to tidy a stray lock of hair and inhaled a deep, steadying breath. Composed, she murmured an incantation and waved her hands. As Kallik watched, her face was bathed not in the ordinary hues of lamp or sunlight, but in a soft blue tint.
Jaina, said Varian, it is good to see you.
And you, Varian, although I wish I were contacting you to ask how Anduin's studies are going.
It sounds as if I should be wishing that, too. What's happening?
Succinctly, she informed him of the situation. Word had not yet reached him about the fall of Northwatch Hold. Varian remained silent as Jaina spoke, interrupting only occasionally for clarification. She told him she had received a warning that the Horde's reach far exceeded its current grasp of Northwatch. Garrosh wants nothing less than the entirety of Kalimdor, Jaina said quietly. He will take Theramore and then launch his forces across the continent all the way to Teldrassil.
If Theramore falls, he could do it too, growled Varian. Damn it, Jaina. I always warned you that this Horde you were so fond of would turn on you like a tamed wild beast.
Kallik raised an eyebrow, but Jaina remained calm. It is clear to me that Garrosh is the driving force behind all this. The Horde would never have done anything like this under Thrall's leadership.
But Thrall is not leading the Horde, and now Theramore, indeed all of Kalimdor, might pay the price.
She didn't rise to the bait. It is clear, then, that you realize the severity of the situation. A sigh.
I do, he said. And in answer to your unasked question, yes, Stormwind will stand with Theramore. I'll divert the 7th Legion's naval fleet toward Theramore immediately.
There was a pause.
And as things seem to be quiet for once in at least a few parts of this world, I'll notify several of my finest generals to report to you as well. They'll give you a hand with the city's defense, and together you can hammer out a strategy that will send those Horde dogs home with their tails between their legs.
She smiled gratefully. Varian, thank you.
Don't thank me yet, the King of Stormwind said. It's going to take a few days. You'll want a good-sized force to greet the Horde, and some of the generals I want to send to you are stationed in rather distant places.
Kallik's heart sank. The Horde was only a day's march, perhaps two, and its forces were already gathered at Northwatch. Varian's strategy was a good one, so far as it went. But all the king's generals and all the king's ships could not save Theramore if they arrived an hour too late. He wished he could speak, but had to content himself with clenching his fists in frustration. What was worse than his own dismay was seeing Jaina looking stunned and worried.
Are you sure? Varian, one of my scouts said he saw the Horde still assembled in full numbers at Northwatch.
If they are still gathered and not yet marching, said Varian, they obviously are not interested in a swift conquest. They have their own plots. I will move as fast as I may, Jaina, but nothing can change the fact that it will take time to assemble any kind of a fleet that would make a difference. I'm sorry. It's the best I can do.
Jaina nodded. Of course I know that, Varian. And you raise a good point. I'll be contacting the other Alliance leaders as well. The Kaldori may be able to send both ships and warriors. The dwarves, warriors, and perhaps griffins. I think even the Draenei would be willing to help.
I will speak with Greymane, said Varian. I know well a few worgen on the battlefield will strike fear, even into the hearts of the more bestial members of the Horde.
Thank you, Jaina said. Sometimes it's easy to feel a bit deserted here on this island.
Well, don't, said Varian,
but his voice was kind.
Contact me again in a few hours, and we will share our information. Take care, Jaina. We will win this yet.
I know we will, said Jaina. and as the soft blue light of the magic mirror faded and her features returned to normal hues, Kalikos resolved that whatever happened, he would do all he could to make sure Jaina's faith was justified. Chapter 11. 4 days. 4 full days had the massed army of the Horde waited for the order to march on Theramore. Garrosh had stayed in his war chief's battle tent, and no request for an audience had been granted. Loyal the Horde might have been to its war chief, but patient its members were not. There had been muttered complaints, quietly voiced questions. Bane, who had complaints and questions aplenty, had kept his sharp ears tuned to the murmurs and had discreetly spoken with those who, like he, were concerned about this inexplicable delay. He and Hamul Runtotem set up a meeting some distance away from the ruin, near a giant tree that had been on the right side of the Great Divide when the land had bucked and heaved during the cataclysm, and were the first to arrive. They all came, one by one, Captain Friend Asfarli and a few companions from the Forsaken, Kelentir Bloodblade, Captain Zix Grindergear, who commanded one of the Zeppelins, and his first mate, Lar Zizek, Margolag, who represented Eitrig, and more than a few of his own Tauren. The last ones to come were Vol'jin and two of his people. Bane was both pleased and worried to see his friend present for this meeting. For a moment, they all simply stood and regarded Bane. He looked at them, each in turn.
"No one here is a traitor to the Horde," he said in his deep, rumbling voice. "It is possible to be loyal and yet question the wisdom of certain behavior. But all of us gathered here tonight know well that treason is in the eye of the beholder, and that Mal'Korok views us with a very unkind eye indeed."
Silence, save the soft sound of weight being shifted from one foot to another. Bane continued.
"It is for love of the Horde that I have asked you to attend. And now, before anyone can be accused of treasonous behavior, I invite those who do not wish to be here to leave. No one will condemn you for withdrawing, but if you so choose, as we will forget your involvement up to this point if we are captured and interrogated, I would ask you to forget ours. Leave freely and go in peace."
A Tauren, nothing more than a large shape to Bane's eyes as he stood far from the small campfire, turned to go. One or two of the undead left as well. The rest remained.
"You are courageous,"
Bane told them, indicating that they might sit.
"We're scared witless is what we is," said Zix's first mate. "Anybody got any booze?"
Wordlessly, a troll handed him a wineskin, and the goblin took a huge swallow.
"Blar speaks truly, if somewhat inelegantly," said Kelentir. "We have heard what happens to those who speak out against Garrosh. Thrall, at least, would have listened, and he never would have led us down this path. The Alliance will..."
Bane held up a hand.
"Peace, my friend. You are right about such things, but Thrall is no longer our war chief. Garrosh Hellscream is... And our purpose here tonight is not to lead an insurrection, but to discuss what he has done up until this point, and the wisdom, or lack thereof, of his choices."
He nodded to Hamul, who handed him a branch, around which feathers, beads, and bits of bone were tied.
"This is the speaking stick. Only he or she who holds it may speak."
He held it out in front of him.
"Who wishes to speak first?"
"I would speak, High Chieftain Bloodhoof."
It was Friend Asfarli. Bane inclined his head, and the stick was passed to the leader of Garrosh's Forsaken forces.
"I serve the Horde, but it seems the Horde does not serve me, or my lady."
We were once human. I myself once lived in the very city of Stormwind, which is certain to come bearing down on us at any moment. The Alliance is surely aware of what has happened by now, and I think Lady Jaina, too wise a leader, not to know that Theramore could be next in line to fall.
His supposition was truer than he knew. Bane did not reveal anything by change of expression. He merely listened.
Yet, knowing all this, Lady Sylvanas agreed to send aid to the Endeavor. But to what end? We are gathered. The Horde has food, supplies, and for those of you whose blood still flows in your veins, I know that blood burns hot for battle. Why is he waiting? Each day that passes, his troops become more uncertain. This is not wisdom. This is simply...
He groped for words.
Irresponsibility.
Bloodblade extended her hand for the speaking stick. I agree with Captain Farley. His lands and ours are vulnerable if the humans decide to retaliate there instead of sending ships to Theramore. The swifter the strike, the swifter the reward. I cannot comprehend why Garrosh delays. More time serves our enemies and harms us.
I don't know why he... began the goblin first mate.
Wait for the stick, friend, rumbled Bane.
Blar looked a little embarrassed. He cleared his throat and began again, clutching the stick with both hands.
What I was going to say is, I don't know why he did this in the first place. Trade Prince Gallywix might see coffers overflowing with gold, but all I see are goblins being used as cannon fodder for no real profit.
Fulgen gestured for the stick.
Thank you, my little green friend, he said. You all know that trolls be a proud and ancient people. We joined the Horde because Senjin had a vision the troll would help us, lead us to safety. And he did. He was a good leader. Now Thrall be gone and Garrosh be in his place. Thrall, he understands the elements, the spirits. He be the first new shaman his people had seen in a long, long time. We understand the elements, the spirits too, and I tell you true now, what that Garrosh did with his dark shaman, it make the spirits angry. I don't know how long he be able to control those molten giants, and if he don't...
He cackled.
Well, we all saw the cataclysm. That was the world in pain from Deathwing. How much worse is it gonna be if the elements be in pain from the Horde? Who you think they gonna attack? It be us, Mon.
Yes, it be you who will suffer, Mon, but not from the elements.
The deep, rough voice came from nowhere. At once, Bane leaped to his hooves. The others assembled did likewise, many of them drawing weapons. But Bane recognized that voice and shouted,
Lay down your weapons! Lay them down!
The bull speaks wisely,
said Malkorok, stepping forward so he could be seen by the campfire's light.
If I see any weapons in the next 3 heartbeats, I will slay their owners.
The threat was not bellowed, but it did not need to be to chill the blood of everyone who heard it. Slowly, those Horde members who had drawn daggers or swords, or who had knocked their arrows, complied.
I did not believe it, said another voice.
This one was not calm, but angry, and, Bane realized, wounded. Garrosh Hellscream strode forward, regarding the gathering with disgust. Bane could now see the two had not come alone. Shapes were shifting about in the darkness. Korkron.
I had word of your little meeting, said Garrosh.
His gaze fell upon Captain Zix, and he beckoned. At once, the goblin scurried to Garrosh, trying to look calm and merely looking as though he was hiding behind the orc's massive bulk.
I came to observe, with my own eyes and ears, if what Malkorok said was true.
Bane turned toward him.
If you saw and heard it all, he said,
then you know that this is not treachery. No one here sought to overthrow you. No one here chanted, "Death to Garrosh." What was said here was said out of concern for the Horde, which we all are devoted to.
To question the Horde's war chief is to question the Horde, growled Malkorok.
It does so only if, in your mind, 2 + 2 = 5, retorted Bane. Our concerns are valid, War Chief. Many of us have sought audience with you so that we might say things to your face, so that we might have answers or explanations. The only reason we are gathered here tonight is because you would not see us.
I do not need to answer to you, Torin, spat Garrosh.
Or you, troll, he said to Vol'jin. You are not my keepers, nor are you puppet masters to make me dance to your tunes. You serve as the blade of the Horde. I am the wielder of that blade. I know things that you do not, and I tell you, you will wait. And you will continue to wait until I deem the time is right.
Thrall would have seen us, Hamul said angrily. Thrall listened to advice when it was sound, and he did not keep his methods or plans overly secret. He knew that while he was the leader of the Horde, it was the Horde as a whole that mattered.
Garrosh strode up to the elderly Torin, pointing to his brown face with its black tattoos.
Does this look like the green skin of Thrall?
No, War Chief, said Hemel. No one would ever mistake you for Thrall.
It was almost respectful, but Bane saw Malkorok's eyes narrow at the comment. Garrosh, however, appeared mollified.
The inexplicable love some of you have for that peace-hungry shaman astounds me, he said.
He moved as he spoke, looking from face to face.
You would do well to remember. It is because of Thrall that we are in this position to begin with. It was Thrall, not Garrosh, who let the Alliance encroach. Thrall, who held secret meetings with a human mage, Jaina Proudmore, and all but sat like a dog at her feet. Thrall, whose mistakes I must now correct.
Bloodblade began to speak.
But, War Chief,
Garrosh whirled on the Blood Elf, striking her hard across the face. There was an angry murmur and a slight surge of the crowd. At once, Garrosh had Gorehowl in his hands, and the Corcron had swords and maces in theirs.
Your war chief is merciful, Garrosh snarled. You live so that you may obey me, Blood Elf.
Bloodblade nodded slowly. The gesture was clearly painful.
Yes, said Garrosh, eyeing Bane and Vol'jin. Your war chief is indeed merciful. In your own Torin fashion, Bane, you are right. Your concern is for the Horde. I cannot be your leader and not value that, even if your way of showing concern could be viewed as treasonous by a lesser leader. I need you, all of you. We will work together for the glory of the Horde, and when the time is right, trust me, you will have no lack of Alliance scum to slaughter. Now it is time to return to your encampments and await your war chief's order.
Bane, Vol'jin, and the others bowed as Garrosh passed. Like shadows, the Corcron followed behind him. Bane breathed a sigh of relief. Word must not have reached the ears of Garrosh, or, more important, the ears of Malkorok, about Perith Stormhoof's mission, or else Bane Bloodhoof would no longer be alive. Bane realized that, in his own way, Garrosh needed Bane's goodwill as much as Bane needed Garrosh's. Garrosh had to know that there were many who did not follow willingly, and Bane was a known moderate. As Bane went, so went a large number of Horde. For a moment, Bane stood silently contemplating this revelation. Then he retired to his tent. After tonight's events, he badly needed to purify himself with a clean scent of sage smoke. He always felt sullied every time he acquiesced to anything Garrosh Hellscream demanded.
You should have let me kill a few, grumbled Malkrok. Or at least punish them in some fashion.
They are all fine soldiers, and we will need them, Garrosh replied. They are afraid. That will suffice for now.
A younger orc ran up to Malkrok and whispered something in his ear. The Black Rock orc smiled.
On the heels of such an unpleasant encounter, he said, I have good news for my war chief. Phase 2 of your campaign has begun.
Captain Garga squinted one eye against the bright sunlight and peered through a spyglass with the other. The waves were cooperating. The sailing was smooth. His lips curved around his tusks as he grinned at what he saw, and then he lowered the spyglass. He looked aft to see the other ships of the War Chief's Navy sailing steadily behind. The Blood and Thunder and the other vessels, all crowded with cannons and crewed by orcs eager for the battle that was yet to come, moved closer to their destination. Initially, Garga had been insulted when the Blood and Thunder and the other orc vessels had not been asked to participate in the raising of Northwatch Hold, as it was coming to be known. He was mollified when Garrosh had told him that while Northwatch was being taken by the goblins, forsaken, and blood elves, he was saving his orcs for another, more glorious battle. Garrosh had informed him,
You, Captain Garga, will lead the fleet against Theramore.
Garga's barrel chest had swelled with pride. It was not the first time Garrosh had shown the Blood and Thunder favor. Well did Garga recall when, as first mate, he had assisted in ferrying several Magnetar from Northrend to unleash upon the Alliance. Brelm, the captain, had taken full responsibility for the loss of 2 Magnetar during a terrible storm. Brelm had fully expected to be executed for the setback. Instead, Garrosh had held the captain blameless and had actually promoted him, and, with that gesture, promoted Garga to captain. The Blood and Thunder was a lucky ship, it would seem. Everyone wanted to transfer to her, so Garga had had his pick of sea dogs from which to choose. It boded well for the battle. While the Blood Elf, Goblin, and Forsaken ships had assembled in Ratchet, the orc ships had set sail for Theramore. They had waited in Horde waters, safely out of sight. Waited and waited for further instructions, which had come in the form of a hawk with a message tied to its leg.
Move into position. Take care you do not cross into Alliance territory. Do not flush the quarry too soon. Await my order.
So it was that now, eagerly, they moved close enough to see the towers of Theramore through a spyglass. Satisfied that they were still, technically, in Horde waters, Garga barked the order that the anchor be dropped. With much grunting, 2 crewmen wrestled the giant iron hook into the water. It splashed loudly, then sank to the ocean bottom. Garga noticed his first mate looking both sad and sullen. He smacked the young orc gently on the head.
An expression like that will spoil the rum, he said.
The young orc snapped to attention, saluting.
Pardon, Captain, sir. I was just... Just what? Sir, wondering why we moved at all, sir, if we're not going to attack. A fair question, but a foolish one, Garga replied. We are now close enough so that when the order to attack does come, we will be able to respond at once. And yet we are not in Alliance waters. They will see us and wring their hands and worry, but they can do nothing unless we violate their waters. Even here, so far from shore, the Horde causes the Alliance to quake with fear. Our duty is to hold position, Lokor. Garrosh knows more than we do. We will stay put until the moment he tells us the time is right to strike. Do not worry, he said, gentling his voice. Alliance blood will flow, and you'll be one who sheds it. All of you!
Lokor smiled, and the crew of the Blood and Thunder cheered. Jaina had hoped that what the dockmaster had told her wasn't true,
prayed, even. But when she looked through the spyglass herself in the topmost part of the tower, her heart sank.
"So many," she murmured.
Kallik, Kindi, Paind, and Tervosh peered through the spyglass, and all looked solemn.
"It seems as though your information was correct," said Tervosh.
"And you said Varian's fleet isn't due to arrive for at least another day, probably two," said Kindi somberly. "I counted at least 8 warships. If they decide to attack before the 7th gets here, we all might as well start getting used to eating cactus apple surprise."
Jaina placed a hand on Kindi's shoulder. "I wouldn't be sure that Garrosh even takes prisoners, Kindi."
"My lady," said Paind, "let us strike now. Surely Garrosh is not sending only a few ships. Remember the numbers gathered, waiting at Northwatch. It will cost lives, but at least..."
"No," Jaina said firmly. "They are not in Alliance waters. I will defend Theramore, but I cannot condone being the aggressor. We'll just have to wait."
"And hope," muttered Tervosh.
Kallikos had remained silent through the conversation, no doubt because he wished to remain neutral. Just as he opened his mouth to speak, Kindi piped up.
"Lady, I think you should go to Dalaran."
Jaina's brow furrowed. "What do you mean?"
"You have friends there, and admirers."
"That's so. But the Kirin Tor is composed of both Horde and Alliance Magi. They cannot side with us. They would betray that neutrality."
"Maybe they would, and maybe they wouldn't," Kindi said. "I mean, they don't want to see the kind of bloodshed Garrosh is after. And we know there are even some Horde members who are willing to risk everything to warn us. It's worth asking."
"Indeed it is," said Kallik, looking pleased. "There is such a thing as the greater good."
Jaina looked at Tervosh.
"I agree with Kindi," he said.
"Quite rightly," said the gnome.
Paind was nodding as well. Jaina sighed. "Very well. Let's see what Master Ronan has to say. Please, do not get your hopes up. Paind, start talking with the soldiers. We should be ready, in case the captains of those ships decide that now is a fine time to attack."
She met Kallik's eyes. He gave her a reassuring smile. She returned it, with one that did not feel reassured, and went to her parlor.
She touched the 3 books, and the bookshelf slid aside, revealing the mirror. Chanting the spell and moving her hands, Jaina stood before the mirror, gazing into her own eyes for a moment before the blue swirl obscured its reflective surface. For several tense heartbeats, she worried that Ronan was too far away. But then his face came into view, tinted in hues of blue. His strong features looked weary until he recognized Jaina. Then he brightened.
"Lady," he said, "please tell me you are contacting me, because Kallikos has recovered the focusing iris."
"Unfortunately, no. We were able to find a way for him to detect it again, but it seems whoever has it is ferrying it about to distract him. He is waiting. They must stop at some point if they are to use it."
Ronan nodded his red head and rubbed his eyes.
"That assumes he'll be able to get to it in time before they do, whatever it is they intend to do with it."
"He is well aware of that," said Jaina. "But there seems to be no other option."
"Even dragons tire," said Ronan. "Well, if that isn't what you wish to talk about, what is?"
Ronan's no-nonsense attitude often irritated others, but not Jaina. She found it refreshing. He had been a seemingly strange choice to lead the Kirin Tor, and no one knew that better than he. He was well aware that he was chosen because he had a history of looking at things in a different way from past leaders. And he was also a damned fine mage.
"Have you heard about Northwatch?" she asked.
"No," he said. "It's a rather small outpost, isn't it?"
"It is. It was a respectably sized garrison, designed to keep an eye on the Horde activity in the Southern Barrens."
Ronan had gone instantly alert at the usage of the past tense. 4 days ago, the Horde destroyed it utterly.
It is reported that they used elemental magic of a very dark kind to do so. I received a warning from someone who was at that battle that the Horde's plan is to march on Theramore. Ronan narrowed his eyes.
And you will not name the source?
I cannot, she said. He came in good faith. I will not dishonor him.
Ronan
said, and pulled on his red beard thoughtfully for a moment.
But you said this was 4 days ago. Why didn't the Horde march straight south and wipe Theramore off the map?
We don't know, said Jaina. But we do know there is a fleet of Horde battleships sitting right at the very outskirts of Alliance waters. Ronan didn't reply at once. Then he said very carefully,
This is all very troubling for the Alliance and Theramore, of course. But what does it have to do with me?
Garrosh doesn't plan to stop there, Jaina said. It's just a jumping-off point to conquer the whole continent. You know Garrosh. He's a hothead.
So am I, said Ronan.
Not bothering with tact, Jaina said. You once were, perhaps, but since you became a husband and father and leader of the Kirin Tor, you've calmed quite a bit. He shrugged and smiled a little, acknowledging the comment. Thousands will die, Jaina said, pressing him. The Alliance will be driven from the shores of Kalimdor. Those who survive will be refugees. We already have too many without food and shelter still from the Cataclysm. The Eastern Kingdoms will not be able to care for the population of half an entire continent.
I ask you again, Jaina Proudmore, Ronan said quietly. What does this have to do with me?
The Kirin Tor does not take sides. I know that, Jaina said. But even Kalikos thought you might be willing to come to our aid.
Protect an Alliance city from an attack by the Horde?
She nodded mutely. He looked off to the side for a long moment, his eyes not focused, then said,
I cannot make such a decision alone. You are going to have to convince others besides me. Dalaran is lovely this time of year.
Chapter 12 Every time Jaina traveled to Dalaran, she was reminded anew of just how beautiful it was. The rich, purple-hued spires of the city reached skyward, even as Dalaran hovered in the sky itself, untouched and untroubled by the concerns of Northrend below it. The streets gleamed, their red cobblestones clean, and its citizens, most of them as untouched and untroubled as the city itself, wandered freely. Here and nowhere else could be found remarkable items from vendors of all things rare and curious. Here could be learned spells and history, whispered in hushed voices, in quiet, peaceful halls. Once, Dalaran had been a firm part of another continent altogether. Jaina remembered it best from those days, remembered strolling in the gardens, plucking golden bark apples, warm from the kiss of the sun. Then Arthas had come. Dalaran had been destroyed, but not vanquished. The Kirin Tor had returned and rebuilt the mage capital, protecting it with a dome of violet magic, until the time had come for Dalaran to flourish anew as a hovering city. From here, the city-state had been the central focus of the Nexus War against Malagos, and, later, the fight against the Lich King. Yet one would find little here that was martial. Dalaran was at its best, and its populace happiest, when knowledge and learning were its greatest concerns. Jaina herself had erected a monument to Antonidas. Usually, when she traveled here, she paid him a visit, sometimes speaking her thoughts aloud as she sat in the shadow of the man's statue. But now, her mission was of utmost importance. She materialized inside the Violet Citadel itself, and the first face she saw was Ronan's.
He smiled in welcome, but his eyes were troubled.
"Welcome, Lady Jaina," he said. "You know everyone here."
"Indeed I do," said Jaina. Standing next to her husband was the white-haired, beautiful Varisa Windrunner. She was the founder of the Silver Covenant and sister to Sylvanas, leader of the Forsaken, and Alaria, lost in Outland. Though the Windrunner family had suffered more than its share of tragedies, Varisa, it seemed, had found happiness as the wife of a great mage and the proud mother of two beautiful children. Such domestic achievements, though, did not mean the High Elf was content to stay in the shadows. As leader of the Silver Covenant, Jaina knew Varisa had publicly and staunchly opposed the admission of Blood Elves into the Kirin Tor. She was, however, destined to be doomed in that pursuit, as the mage on Ronan's left proved. This was Archmage Aethys Sunreaver, the Blood Elf who had struggled as hard to gain admittance into the Kirin Tor as Varisa had struggled to forbid it. The fourth present was a human female, who, though her hair was snowy white, looked as though she could take, and best, anyone in a fight. Archmage Modera had the distinction of serving the longest in the High Council of Magi, the Council of Six, having been a member since the Second War. Jaina nodded respectful greetings to them all, then turned to Ronan. He stepped back a pace and moved his hands with the ease of one long used to working magic. A portal appeared. Jaina frowned slightly. Usually one could get a good glimpse of the place one was traveling to, but this portal seemed to lead not into a room or even a place on land, but into open air. She gave Ronan a quizzical glance.
"The rest of the Six are assembled there," Ronan said, not bothering to answer her unasked question. "Let's not keep them waiting, shall we?"
Trusting him completely, Jaina stepped through. The floor, simple gray and thankfully solid stone inlaid with a diamond pattern, was all that seemed stable. Above and on every side was a shifting sky. Now it was bright blue with lazily drifting clouds, but a heartbeat later stars appeared, and a rich blackness seemed to seep over the blue like spilled ink.
"Welcome, Lady Jaina, to the Chamber of the Air," said a voice.
Or was it several voices, all speaking at once? Dazzled by the room's endless and constantly changing vista, Jaina couldn't be sure. She tore her gaze away from the compelling, almost hypnotic skywall and looked at the Six, who formed a circle with Jaina in the center. In bygone days, she knew, they had concealed their identities, even from other members of the Kirin Tor. But that tradition had recently fallen by the wayside. She could plainly identify each member. In addition to Modera, Aethys, and Ronan, she beheld Ansirim Runeweaver. He was not often in Dalaran. Recent tasks had necessitated his traveling extensively. On what mission, of course, Jaina did not know. Runeweaver Square was named in homage to this sharp-eyed, decisive man. Present, too, was Carlane, alchemist and mage both. Once at the mercy of his emotions, Carlane had learned to master them. Few were as controlled and thoughtful as he. Last, but most assuredly not least, Jaina recognized the aged visage of a young man, Khadgar, one of the most powerful magi in Azerothian history. Though he looked to be thrice Jaina's age, she knew the mage was only a decade older than she. Apprentice to Medivh, observer for the Kirin Tor, the closer of the Dark Portal, he dwelt in Outland, working with the Naru Adal. That he was here, willing to discuss the matter of the protection of Theramore, gave her hope.
"Don't just stand there gawking," he said chidingly, but with a twinkle in his eye. "I'm not getting any younger."
Jaina inclined her head respectfully. "First, let me say that you do me great honor by listening to my plea. I shall be brief. You all know me as a moderate, a diplomat. For years, I have ceaselessly worked toward peace in Azeroth between the Alliance and the Horde.
that I am here now, asking the aid of the Kirin Tor to defend an Alliance city against the Horde, must convey to you how dire and one-sided the situation is.